Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 408 of the podcast. And it's Friday, 21st of December, 2018, as I record this in Auckland, New Zealand. And I'm actually in my mother-in-law's front room, so it might be a bit echoey. So today I'm talking about tips for long-term publishing success with the lovely Mark Leslie Lefebvre, who used to be Mark from Kobo and is now Mark from Drafter Digital. And we talk about the opportunities for writers when keeping your day job, which is often the best idea, professionalism and how that's so important for your author career, as well as patience, which both of us talk about in terms of our own writing journey, and also marketing in person, because Mark has a skeleton Barnaby Bones who he takes around to bookstores and things when he's doing his horror novels and his haunted places books. And also we talk about Mark's podcast, Stark Reflections on Writing and Publishing, and whether podcasting is good for marketing from his perspective. So that is coming up. So in publishing news, more exciting audiobook news. Last week, Findaway Voices announced distribution to Storytel, and this week they announced distribution to Apple Books. And but even with a better deal than with ACX. So the problem if you publish audio through ACX is you can't set the price, and if you go exclusive, you get I think it's 40%. And if you go non-exclusive, you get 20%. And or it might be 5% more than that. Anyway, they are saying if you deliver your audiobook to Apple Books through Findaway Voices, you can set your list price and earn 45% of that list price for every sale. So, oh yes, here we go. Authors were earning 25% royalties on non-exclusive, 40% for exclusive, with no control of list price. Now there's a single royalty rate for everyone with no exclusivity commitments. So this is really interesting. And people have been asking me lately about my exclusivity thing with ACX. So essentially, I, because of loads of other things going on, I have not yet got my audio on Findaway Voices, but I will be doing that in early 2019, and for those books which are not exclusive. And I do have some earlier royalty split deals that I did with narrators that remain exclusive on ACX for 7 years, but my the ones where I own the entire rights, I will be pulling them out of the exclusivity contract when I can, which you can do after 1 year, and then you can put them wide. So going wide with audio, something I'll be talking about more next year. Also in publishing, Drafter Digital announces account sharing, and I think this is genius. I wish this was available on every platform, and I think this is a great idea. So essentially, D2D account sharing will allow you to give select users limited access to your Drafter Digital account. So if you have a virtual assistant or family member or friend who manages your books on your behalf, you can now grant them access to do what you need. And I'll link to this in the show notes, but it's on the Drafter Digital blog. So of course, you can get to all the almost all the vendors through Drafter Digital, and this means you can use an author's assistant, virtual assistant, or, you know, I know a lot of couples where one partner does more of the publishing and the other one does the writing, or, you know, just where you want to give access to someone else. This is so good. So well done, Drafter Digital, who of course are a sponsor of the podcast. So always lovely to hear that they are helping authors with all kinds of stuff. So from a little personal perspective, as I said, I'm still in Auckland, New Zealand, and I've been sharing my pictures on Instagram.com/JFPenAuthor. And we have been doing some family things. I'm here on a personal trip, and we do have some health things going on in the family. So there are, it's not an entirely a holiday. I mean, we're definitely doing some lovely things. We went out on the boat, went over to Waiheke Island, which is just lovely. And the weather's been great. And but it's interesting because there are lots of things at the moment that are quite uncertain. And this is very, what can I say? This is interesting for me. Let's say interesting because I'm someone who really likes to be clear about my goals and then to execute on those goals and to not have anything get in the way except like things that I can't control. And this is, you know, potentially one of those things we can't control. So I am very grateful to have a business that's portable, and we will see what 2019 brings at the moment. But because I'm on a personal family trip, I am not doing any writing. I just find I need routine in order to get my creative writing done, but I am enjoying things. I'm reading a lot of brainless zombie fiction, which I'm very much enjoying. Zombie apocalypse books always make the world seem awesome. And I'm enjoying the weather, getting some sun. So yeah, if you want to see the pictures, check out my Instagram at jfpenauthor. Right, so thanks for all your emails and tweets and comments. Remember, you can tweet me at the Creative Pen with a double N. You can leave a comment on the show. Remember, all the podcast episodes have show notes where you can get all the links, also a transcript. Yay! And a link to the video if you want to say, have a look at what my guests look like. Okay, so here's a couple of the emails and tweets. Amy says, love that you're doing a more advanced show these days. And I really appreciate that because as I've been saying, and I've started working on my kind of my year end post. So I'm doing two posts. I'll do a 31st of December roundup of the year, and then I'll do a 1st of January goals for 2019. And yes, a lot of those will be personal things, but I hope that you'll also find that useful for your own planning and your own sort of looking back and celebrating. So thanks, Amy, and those of you who have also told me that you're enjoying the more advanced topics. And I think inevitably that happens. And if you're new, I hope that it also inspires you about where you can possibly get to in the future. I think also we're on episode, what are we on? What did I just say? 408. We're on episode 408. It's been almost 10 years of the podcast. And if I was not covering other stuff, I wouldn't be able to do this anymore. I need to be interested myself in what we're talking about. So glad you like that too. Shauna says, I just wanted to thank you for the free informative Author 2.0 blueprint. It is by far the most complete, informative and helpful resource on self-publishing that I have found. Thank you, Shauna. And of course, if you guys want the blueprint, it's my email sign up, my reader magnet. There we go. My reader magnet with loads of videos and loads of extra stuff. Just go to thecreativepen.com/blueprint. Thanks to Bonnie, who sent a picture of herself listening to the show while doing housework in Santiago de Chile. And Bonnie is French, living in Chile. And thank you so much for your support of the podcast, Bonnie. And I'll be reading Bonnie's name out again in a minute. Thanks to Mark Dawson, who was sent a lovely picture of a frosty morning in Salisbury. Mark lives quite near where I do in the West Country, and a picture with Scout the dog out enjoying the winter sun. And congratulations to Mark, who has on his podcast, on the SPF podcast, about his seven-figure year. So I'm sure many of you already listen to the SPF podcast. And Tenzin YW, hi Tenzin, said, I was jumping up and down when I heard you mention WeChat, as I've been using it to keep in contact with my families in Bhutan for several years. It's a very popular app in Asia, like WhatsApp in the UK and other places. Add Bhutan to your bucket list. Thanks, Tenzin. And that's really interesting to know. I always find it, we always get so sort of, you know, caught up in what is normal for us that we forget what is normal for other people can be completely different. So that is very cool. And yeah, that will do for now. But thanks to everyone who emails and tweeted and all the rest. So today's show is sponsored by everyone who supports the show on Patreon and, of course, everyone who supports my business through the creativepen.com and JF Pen, and by buying books and courses and spreading the word about the website, and everyone who listens and everything. Yes, so all of you guys. Thank you so much. If you are a patron of the show, support the business in any way, I just am so appreciative. And of course, supporting the business can be spreading the word by social media or mentioning things. And I've heard from a lot of you. It's so funny, I'll hear from someone who goes along to a writing group and someone else recommends the podcast, and that's very cool. So I really appreciate word of mouth marketing. It means so much to me. So thank you all. You enable this podcast to continue, and I hope to be doing it for at least another year. I think I've committed to episode 500, right? So another couple of years. So thanks to everyone supporting the show on Patreon, and especially new patrons this week: Natalie Roberts, Kristen Hall Geisler, Beth Okamoto, Cassandra Cooper, Ryan Watt, TR Cameron, and Bonnie Leclerc. I really appreciate your support on Patreon. Like your tweets and emails, it demonstrates you enjoy the show and want it to continue. And for a couple of dollars a month, or a couple of coffees a month, if you're feeling generous, you will get all the extra monthly Q&A audio, including several years of backlist. So if you need to binge listen to some useful content this holiday season, support the show on Patreon and you will get tons of extra audio. So you can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Right, let's get on with the interview with Mark. Today, I'm back with Mark Leslie Lefebvre. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Joanna, it's great to be back.
Oh, yeah, it's so funny. Yeah, I mean, you've been on the show a number of times, but in case people don't know who you are, Mark is a horror author and also writes nonfiction about haunted places and books for authors, including Killing It on Kobo and the 7 P's of Publishing Success, which is what we're talking about today. But before we get into it, Mark, people might be confused about who you actually are, because you used to be Mark from Kobo and now you're not. So just give us a bit of an update about like what's been going on with you the last, 18 months, and what you're doing now, and like how your life has changed, and whether your life has changed, I guess.
Oh, yeah, my life has changed in a significant way. So I was hired by Kobo to come up with a solution for self-publishing. In 2011, I started there as a director of author relations and self-publishing, and I came up with Kobo Writing Life and built a beautiful platform and hired the most wonderful team in the world. And I actually did hire Christine Monroe with the goal of her replacing me. And I got to a certain point after 6 years. It was a very successful business. You know, one in every 4 books that sells on Kobo was coming from Kobo Writing Life. And I had all the right people in place, and I was loving the job, but not liking the commute. So I decided, my boss and I had a frank discussion. We were also, you know, seeing things in different ways. And there were certain directions that I knew he wanted to go in, and there were directions I wanted to go in. And I thought, okay, I built this cool thing. I've got these great people. I can leave my baby in the hands of people I trust and go on to do other things. So I left Kobo in November of 2017. And the goal was to strike it out on my own, to write full time. I'd been wanting to write full time my entire life, and to continue to do speaking engagements and to do help authors in one on one. You know, so through Readzy, for example, I've been doing one on one coaching and marketing with authors, and it's been a fantastic year. My commute has been amazing, because it's, you know, I get up in the bedroom still at 5:30 in the morning. I still, you know, feed the animals, put the coffee on, slip into the den, and get to work every day. And it's been a fantastic year. Of course, what happened was when I was at Novelist Inc., where I think we last saw one another in person.
Indeed.
I've always gotten along really, really well with the folks from Draft to Digital. And Chris Austin and I, he's the CEO of Draft to Digital. So Chris was there, and so was Aaron, who's the president, and Dan Wood, and Kevin Tomlinson. And so the D2D team was there, and it's always fun to hang out with them, not just for karaoke, but for all the fun conversations about publishing. And we realized that there were some synergies there and that there were some connectivities. And it was an interesting situation because I wanted to continue to maintain my independence, but I also wanted the opportunity to go and build things. So Chris and I came to an amazing compromise where I'm a remote employee of Draft to Digital. I'm now the director of business development. I still have my freedom to do my independent things, but I'm also an employee of Draft to Digital, working remotely on business relationships, working with distributors, working with different companies, and ways that Draft to Digital can work with other people to help authors. So it's almost like the natural progression from what I was doing with Cobo Writing Life. And I've kind of taken it beyond that. And I think it kind of stems back to my partner, Liz, had been with me at a conference, and we talked to an author. And the author was asking for my advice. And I kept coming back to say, well, Cobo can do this for you. Cobo can do that for you. Cobo. And she stopped me afterwards, and she said he didn't want to know what Cobo could do for him. He wanted to know what you could do for him. And so now the natural progression is, and I've done this in the last year, and I can continue to do this with Draft to Digital, is what is your goal as an author? How can I help you? And now with Draft to Digital, because it's not just about one retailer, it is publishing wide. Now I can help authors in many, many ways, regardless of their publishing path and desire. And so it was a perfect opportunity for me to join the team. And I did join the team, I suppose it would have been in October of this year. And I'm still learning. The difference is, you know, I turn to Dan all the time, Dan Wood, and lean on him a lot because he knows everything. I can reach out to him very easily on Slack. We have another meeting later today. And because I used to know everything about Cobo, and now I'm starting from scratch.
I think this is a really good, I wanted to, you know, I didn't prompt you with this question, but I am interested in it because many people leave a day job and start writing full time. And I know that first year for me was very hard. It was very hard in many ways. The loss of status, the loss of community, the loss of steady income, you know, the loss of a lot of things. And what I think is, and so I think one of the messages that I want out of your situation is kind of, yes, you can still be a writer and have a day job. So regardless of the fact that you're working in the author industry, you're now juggling writing your fiction, your own nonfiction, and a day job. So, you know, what have you learned anything in that way? Like the balance between having, yeah, sure, having your own time to write, but also the value of a day job.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, when I was at Cobo, I was working 60 to 80 hours a week. So I didn't have much balance. In the last year, I regained that balance. And I've approached Draft to Digital in a way that I am keeping that balance. And I am actually writing more. I've learned to condition myself because I had to train myself in the last year. And train myself that regardless of the fact I didn't have to go into an office, I did not have to be anywhere, I still got up Monday through Friday, every morning at 5 a.m., with a few exceptions, or even sometimes on the weekends to get stuff done because, you know, I started the podcast. And I think to me, it's important to maintain that connection, but I've maintained the connection over the years. So I wasn't missing that. I think what I was missing was I was missing getting the opportunity to work with really smart people I respect and admire. I had that at Cobo. I have it again at Draft to Digital. And then not just being able to work on helping authors, but to be able to get my fingers in the weeds again and help authors in a different way. And that it almost feels like there's more opportunity for both me as an author independently, but also as sort of an advocate for authors. I really miss that advocacy, and I'm feeling I'm putting that back on. In a positive way that's not taking away from my life.
No, and that's great. I like that message because I left 7 years ago or whatever and went full time, but I totally understand the value of the day job, especially almost leveraging bigger stuff. Like I'm interested in AI, but how much more could I do with AI if I worked for Google, for example? So, you know, I definitely think that that's great. But let's move into your 7 P's book, which is excellent. I really enjoyed it and I have lots of notes actually. It's great. And I think I'm really glad you got into writing books for authors too, because again, you've got all of that experience talking to thousands of them over the years. But I want to start with professionalism, because I actually think your professionalism is the reason Drafts Digital wanted to pick you up. You know, you wouldn't have got that opportunity without being a professional. So, right. But for authors specifically, what are some of the mistakes that authors make in terms of professionalism, and how can they be better at building a personal brand?
Well, I think this was a lot easier before the internet, right? And we talk about the millennials and the fact that, you know, when I was a certain age, I could do things and get away with it, and there was nobody there with a camera videotaping it, right? That's not the case anymore. But that's also the case, you have to think of it as authors. We're out there in social media, we're making comments, we're interacting with people, whether it's editors, writers, industry professionals, and everyone's watching. When I was at Kobo, I paid a lot of attention to what authors were saying and doing. And I'll be honest with you, and retailers will pay attention to the, you know, are you out there doing nothing but bad mouthing? Are you doing nothing but stabbing other authors in the back? Well, that's going to come back and reflect on you. So I think even not just in your communication, whether you're, you know, at a conference or whether you're doing something online, you have to remember somebody's always watching, or assume somebody is always watching. Mm-hmm. And I think it's easier to be yourself and professional, so long as there's a professional element of myself. Yeah, when I'm at the conferences, I do karaoke and I do silly things and stuff like that, but I still do it with professionalism in mind. And of course, I've always had that author brand. Of course, now behind me, for anyone who might be watching the video, I have Barnaby Bones, my skeleton. That's part of my horror author brand. But part of my industry rep brand is I always wear a jacket. That's something that's consistent. And I often talk to authors is your brand can be eclectic and can be strange, but should also have something that's consistent with who you are. And ideally consistent with professionalism, which how do you treat people on an ongoing basis? It will come back to haunt you in positive and potentially negative ways.
Yeah. And I also think, like, at the moment, I feel this is important too, doing things like podcasting. So I've been doing some voice coaching for narration of audiobooks, which is a completely different skill, obviously. But I feel like many authors will need to do more audio, need to do more podcasting or speaking or this, that, and the other. And professionalism to me is also upskilling and training. So if you're someone, like I met someone at a conference who was like, I'm just not good about being in public. And sure, being an introvert, being shy, those two being different things, but you know.
but I have them both.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, but kind of training for who you want to be. You know what I mean? Do you think that's going to be more important almost?
Oh, I think so. Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, I dress like Batman because you dress for the position you want, right? Like that's the, but I mean, both in the same situation, we're both introverts, but when we're required to by the role we're put into, we will give it our all and put ourselves out there and it's exhausting. But we'll do that because we've learned that. You learn that over time. I learned that over time. And so that's something that you have to practice. The other thing about professionalism, I think it's important, and it leads sort of to one of the other P's, is progression. Not just in your craft, right? You can continually get better at writing. And you talked about that on one of your podcasts I was listening to this morning. You talked about that progression with Chris Fox as well. The two of you talked about that. So, but also that progression in professionalism. You're constantly learning about the industry, which you do through the podcast as well, right? On an ongoing basis, you're always learning new things. Even things that we thought we knew are changing over time.
Yeah.
So that's important.
So I want to talk about patience, because I love that you include this. I mean, some people with the seven P's, it would kind of all be about marketing, but no, most of yours is more actually about psychology and long-term thinking and that type of thing. So talk about patience, especially when it comes to going wide, because the biggest kind of negative reason I hear from people, and I'm sure you'll hear it even more now, is if I leave KU, can I replace my income in 1 month?
No, you can't. And don't expect it to. I mean, no, I mean, historically from Kobo, I did, you know, the average author took 6 to 9 months, if not longer, in order to build their sales on Kobo. And it's not the same. And the algorithms at Amazon change anyway. So whatever was working now, you're constantly learning new things. And I think people spend so much time learning new things about how Amazon's changing and how they can play with the system or game the system or work with the system to be more professional. You need to do the same things on Kobo, on Nook, on Apple, on potentially Google, where there are some authors who are making that. And as you always remind us of the other international markets, mm-hmm. where we're only at the tipping point. We haven't even hit the tipping point of moving from print into digital. Never mind the fact that in North America, where everyone thinks it's all done, print reading is still 70 to 80% of the industry. So mm-hmm. we're still not done growing in digital, even in established markets.
Yeah. So what about patience on a bigger scale? Because you, what I also found interesting, I mean, I've known, we've known each other for years, but I still found the book really interesting because I learned more about you and your history. So you've been in bookselling, like, just give us more of a time frame in terms of patience, like you as an author as well. It's not start in publishing, hit it big, tell us a bit more about how patience has helped you as an author.
Yeah, I think I've been lucky because, when I started writing, it was on a typewriter and it was before the internet, right? So you couldn't, I had to get the Writer's Digest magazine or a magazine or some of the books that I have behind me or the Writer's Market, which would come out once a year. Now, my town would get it months after it had already been available because I was in Northern Ontario. And then I would mail manuscripts off and I have to wait 6 to 9 months to get my rejection in the mail. Then I could package it up again. And we didn't even have photocopiers in my town, so I had to type it again. If I didn't get the full manuscript back, which costs more with self-addressed. So I developed patience at an early age. I also developed, based on the practice at the time, is before you wrote and tried to get your novel published or with an editor or an agent, you were to submit your short stories to markets. And in my case, it was horror and science fiction, urban fantasy, I guess you might call it, to sell more stuff. But I still call it horror, which poor me. You would establish your name, and then after selling a bunch of stories and proving your track record, you would get your book published. Now, I got to a point where I started to become impatient because I think my first professional sale as a writer was in 1992, the year I started in book selling. And I got to a certain point where people were asking me, they said, well, you're a published writer. And I said, yeah, I am. Well, where can I get your stuff? And I went, well, if you drive 6 hours to cross the border into the U.S., there's a small town in upstate New York where if you get there before the end of the month and you only got 4 days, you might find this magazine circulation 500 copies on the shelf still. So I got tired of that, and I used Ingram Lightning Source, which is not available to authors anymore. I'm grandfathered in, so I'm so sort of like the back end of Spark that's not as pretty and easy to use because it was meant for publishers. And I self-published a collection of previously published stories in 2004. So I even learned early on to wait. I learned the process and I understand publishing and I understand, especially because I also traditionally publish. I get paid once a year from my traditional publishers. I get a royalty statement once a year. Mm-hmm. So if you think that, when the dashboard on KDP is down for maintenance or Kobo Writing Life or Draft to Digital is down, it's down for maintenance for half an hour and you're freaking out because you can't look at your sales. I go back and I go, yeah, well, I'll find out what this book, Macabre Montreal was just published, co-authored with Shaina Krishnasamy. I'm not going to know how this book is selling until next April or May, and then I'll get my check from them as well. So I think I'm very fortunate in that my experience in traditional publishing has helped me to understand that the pace of publishing isn't as fast as the pace of getting published. And that's given me the patience to look at markets and say, I've been with Google, the Google Play or the Google Store since probably 2008, 2009. I only started to sell on Google in the last year. So, that's patience. Now, if I had looked at it and said, well, eight years ago, said, no, I'm not selling on Google, I'm going to give up. Well, I think lessons like that are really, really important. And I guess maybe because I've worked with enough authors to realize Hugh Howey didn't make it big until his 10th book, right? It takes a long time to grow a base. And you understand that over time because when you started, with your first book and you didn't give up. Regardless of what happened with that, you kept trying and kept doing new things. And that, again, that comes back to progression. So you brought patience practice, progression, and professionalism all working together. And you haven't done any promo yet, remember?
Yeah, we're going to come to that. But it's funny because I like to remind people, like, you brought up Hugh Howey, but also Hugh, what's nice is Hugh has been quite quiet the last few years. A lot of new authors don't actually know who he is. But, you know, back in the day, he was the one we all talked about. But Hugh also said that the big news of self-publishing is not people like him. It's more people like us who have never hit some massive success, have not yet got our film deal, you know, have not yet made millions. And I think that's the truth, that this thing about patience as well. It may never happen, but if you love what you do and then you're creating work and you're putting the work out there and you're just carrying on and you're having a good time and you love it, then there's no problem with that. I mean, that's most people, sure. Isn't it? You know, that, well, really it is.
Yeah, the majority. Yeah. And again, having been on the inside of a retailer and looking at the stats, yeah, 100%. You know, 90% of the industry are more people like you and I. We might be a little bit more advanced because we've been doing it for a little bit longer. So we've learned and gotten our bruises and cuts along the way. But yeah, are those who are enjoying what they do, working really, really hard and not giving up and continuing to go at publishing it. Because, I mean, it does come back to the nothing sells your existing books like your new book.
Yeah, like another book.
We know that. It's just,
and then one day that might be the book.
Hammered into my own head.
That might be the book that takes off, that does make the million. You just never know. You never know. But let's talk about the P of promotion, because I do want to bring it back to the skeleton, because so much of what we talk about with indie marketing is kind of online marketing. And, you know, we all talk about that ad infinitum. But you often post pictures on social media of you in physical locations with the skeleton, or in the back of your car, or, you know, that type of thing. So I wonder if you would just talk a bit about physical, like marketing in person, in physical places.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, the digital is a great way to market, but I also think physical marketing and even the digital marketing I do on Instagram, etc., with Barnaby Bones and those pictures that I share, that's part of long-term patience, brand building, right, which is important. And it's just that reminder that I'm there doing my thing. I think with finding something that you can identify yourself with, that people recognize this is part of what you do. And with me, with horror, with ghost stories and things like that, it's very obvious that the skeleton is there. Because one of the things that this does is when people see me, they see the skeleton, they either know to avoid me, or if they're interested, like if I'm at a book signing, and again, not just doing book signings at libraries and bookstores, but non-traditional places. I had an author table at the craft fair at the local brewery in Hamilton, Ontario over the summer. So every Saturday, it was $20 for me to buy a table. And every Saturday I'd get up early and I'd cart my stuff there and I'd spend the afternoon at a brewery, which is where I like hanging out anyways. I was not drinking all day, unfortunately, because they weren't licensed outside, which is where we were set up. But I bought a tent, got the stuff, got Barnaby. And what was amazing is it was a long-term patience thing, because people would come by over time. It was startling. I had some people approach me. I was on a podcast in 2006, Paula B's The Writing Show, talking about my novel, Canadian Werewolf in New York, which I was trying to finish 10 years ago, and it took me 10 years to finish it. And I had somebody approach me who saw me at the brewery, and they walked up and said, "Oh my God, Mark Leslie, I remember listening to you on Paula B's podcast in 2006. And I thought it was so amazing. But then over time, the regulars who would come back on Saturday would swing by and talk to me. And then I even picked up a few like really hardy readers who bought every week, would come back and buy a different book for me and then review them. And so I think that physical presence and following the same professionalism is part of a long-term strategy. The other thing I think that works really, really well, and you know, I brought Barnaby to Montreal with Shayna. You know, we did a lot of posts. There was this weird ghost that was behind us. And even though I it was not really a ghost, it was Audrey Hepburn that looked like a ghost. You know, one of the posts that we shared was this story that was written like sales copy, which kind of pulls you in to make you intrigued by the fact that, oh my God, they're sitting there and there's a ghost behind them. But it was really just a reflection of a Audrey Hepburn thing at Indigo, which is like a Barnes & Noble here in Canada. So I think we don't think about our physical presence moving about the world. My car has magnets with my name, my book covers, my URL, and the Chills and Thrills branding that I've used. No matter where I park, well, I have Barnaby in the car anyways. This is one of the Barnabys. I actually have three of them. There's Barnaby sitting on our front step. He now has a Santa Claus hat on, and Liz is a principal. So we've got the a desk, an old a desk that we got at an antique store. So a school desk. He's sitting at the desk. He was there for Halloween. He's there now with a Santa hat on. I have a Barnaby in the car. That's the full one. This guy doesn't have legs. He's just hanging behind me. The other one's neck is broken, so he's sort of propped up. That's part of the branding. So even people who come to the door, I've had delivery people come to the door and go, oh, you write horror? It's like, yeah, oh, cool. And here, go to my website. You can download one of my books for free. Just sign up for the newsletter. Or you've got links to my free books. So constantly thinking about where you are. I used to be parked in a parking lot in Toronto every day for Kobo. And there were numerous times people would shove a note under my window saying, thanks so much for the laugh, because there's a skeleton sitting in my passenger seat. there's always opportunities thinking outside of the digital box where you can actually be promoting yourself as well.
I agree with you. And also, I think, like you said, you're sharing pictures on social media. So you're able to take the physical marketing and actually turn it into something digital. And I often say that to people if they do a event, and even if the event itself is not very good, like if you do a book signing and no one turns up, just get someone to take a few pictures and just make it look like there are people there and you have some marketing. So there are ways, and I really like what you're doing with that, and I've been watching that, and it's kind of something that, you know, I'm still thinking about in terms of how I could do more of that as JF Penn, because I do it as Joanna Penn. But I think you have the two personas very much. You have, you know,
it's similar to yours. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't bring the skeleton when you're doing, you know, author stuff, only when
unless
you're Mark Leslie. Yeah.
Unless I'm using an example of how authors can use author branding.
Oh, which is great marketing.
Yeah, exactly. Again, so it does the double thing, right? Say, for example, in my other persona, I sell scary stuff, and here's Barnaby. I actually have brought him to lectures and classes where I can take the car. I have not yet bought him tickets on an airplane to fly beside me, although I plan on doing that when I can get a good seat sale. That way I get the benefit of elbow room, and you know, you're on a plane for how many hours? There's gonna be people who come and ask you what you're doing with a skeleton.
I bet you there's laws against it if it's real, or is it just plastic?
It's plastic.
Okay.
Yeah, you're not allowed to bring bones on a bag of bones on a plane, but it is plastic, and it's very obviously plastic.
So I do want to ask about podcasting, because you know, a year ago, when you left Kobo, you were doing the Kobo Writing Life podcast, which Chrissy and the team have now taken on, doing a great job with. But you've been podcasting yourself with Stark Reflections. So what part does that podcast now play in your life? Because many people find a lot of people want a podcast, but you and I know how much work it is. It has to be worth it. So just talk a bit about, you know, lessons learned around the year of podcasting, and any tips.
Yeah, I mean, even though I had run a podcast, Chrissy did one a month and I did the other one. So we only did two a month, and I knew I wanted to do a weekly podcast. I still, having done one for years, still underestimated how much time it took, because I'm still, I got my hands in the weeds, and I actually do a short personal intro. I do the interview, usually an interview, and then I reflect on it. And it's as I'm editing the interview that I'm reflecting on what I'm going to say. And then I go, and it's all done in a course of a few hours on a single day. And I almost do it live. I started batching, and then I fell out of it. Now I'm batching again for the Christmas season. I think I wanted to never stop learning. And when I left Kobo, because I left relatively quickly, I told Chrissy, because she was taking over a lot of responsibility, I said, tell you what, I've got a few interviews already done. Why don't I just do podcast for you? I'm not working anymore. I'm not working full time. I'll just finish the podcast and I'll slide them over, and then you can have them. And that way you can get caught up. And as I was doing it, I realized I'm going to miss this. So I went, let's do something really stupid. Let's start my own podcast. And again, I wanted to continue that thing. I've learned so much. It's been an amazing experience. like I'm sure you've experienced, and I know you've experienced, is people will approach you and say, "Oh my God, I recognize you." When you, I was, you know, at a conference, people may hear your voice a room and look over and think, actually, half the time it's because I've been on the Creative Pen podcast that they know my voice. But that's good. But again, that's just part of, it's part of that overall experience. But it also is giving me the opportunity, because I have, I mean, I have a lot of strong opinions about the publishing industry. And I roll my eyes a lot at people who make assumptions because they know, really know something this much, like they know about an inch of it really, really well. And I'm not saying they don't know that, but they know nothing else about the rest of publishing. And they make assumptions based on this really tiny bit of knowledge. And I just get frustrated and go, oh my God, it's so obvious. But instead of getting mad, I thought, well, maybe I can get my voice out there and try to share some of what I've learned in the last 25 plus years to help authors and publishers understand. If I could help big publishers understand all the awesome things authors are doing and help indie authors understand some of the awesome things that big publishers are doing, we'd both be so much better off. Mm-hmm. And the industry would be a lot stronger. And so I think I wanted to bring that to, I want to bring those together rather than the rest of the world. Everyone seems to be fighting each other and pointing at the other as an idiot or there's something wrong with you. I want to bring people together and learn from one another.
Yeah. And I think what you're saying there, I think it's very important. You're talking about a mission-driven podcast, which is also where I started. And that, I think, is the one that will keep you going, not necessarily the one that's going to make money. And, you know, what I think is really important for people to remember about podcasting is what you said also about learning things, wanting to talk to people about stuff, having a mission, you know, the indie mission, as we both have. Those are all the things, those are the reasons to start a podcast, not some people are making money with podcasting.
Yeah, the desire was not to make money off of it. Now, ideally, I've been lucky with patrons and with a sponsor. I've been able to pay for the hosting and actually pay for some of the time. And then I just recently bought better equipment and upped my, obviously, I had to up my downloads as they grow. You have to pay more. So it's helping me maintain that in a positive way. But you're right. The mission is internal. The satisfaction that I get from knowing that I've helped someone, that I've inspired them, that I've educated them is priceless. It really, it truly is. And that motivates me. I know I'm not going to sell books because of it.
Yeah. And well, you sell some books because of it, but I think exactly what you said, I now consider this podcast to be part of my body of work. And there are people who listen to our podcast who may never read our books, or they may never get that information in another way. Or actually, both you and I have put out enough verbally that may never be written down because it's just stuff that we might say off the top of our heads in reflection. But that might be the thing that somebody learns from, and that will hit them more than a, you know, an officially written book. You know what I mean?
Of course. Yeah. And you know what? And there's a perfect example that happened to me about a year ago. I went to a conference to do a talk on a panel. And the year before, I was the keynote for the lunchtime talk. And when I showed up at the panel, I was waiting there talking to my colleagues. And I had an author come up to me and say, "See this book?" They showed it to me and they said, "We'd like to give you a copy of it." And it was dedicated to me. And they had said, "We saw what you did. We heard your story. And we knew that we could do something similar, not the exact same thing, but they were inspired by what I had said and done." And then they took that and applied it to themselves and they published a book. So you don't always get that. You don't always get the opportunity to hear how you influence someone. But that's such an amazing and powerful thing, because you go, wow, I'm glad I took the time to drive all this way to get the, you know, the modicum payment that I received, which barely covered my gas. But you know what I mean? But for the money, I did it because I helped inspire someone. And I think that underlying thing is really, really important. You never know. You never know the person in the back of the room at your last talk that the light went off in their head and suddenly that helped them.
Yeah. And also podcasting is great because, like, you and I are friends probably mainly because we started doing interviews on podcasts and then eventually we met in person. And now it's just like the way we can catch up is by having a podcast interview. So
of course, yeah. If we don't have an excuse to chat already, we can just
Yeah, exactly, which is awesome. And of course, I'm starting another podcast in 2019 and you're going to come on it. So, oh
my goodness. Is it going to be a futurist podcast?
No, it's not. Oh. I haven't announced it yet, but it will be on the 10th anniversary of the Creative Pen podcast.
I'll be listening to very soon.
No. This is I've done two 10-year things. So 10-year of the creativepen.com is now, like, you know, it's just happened when this goes out. But the 10 years of the podcast is March 2019.
We'll have to hear about it then. You're wonderfully teasing people. This is awesome.
I'm trying. I'm not very patient, unfortunately. Right, we are.
Can I hit the buy in advance button for that?
So we're almost out of time. But what I wanted to ask you, so we're coming into 2019 as this show goes out. And you're now with Draft Digital. There's lots of things that D2D are doing to expand. But both you as Mark from D2D and Mark as Mark, what do you think authors should be focusing on for 2019 over and above the standard, yes, write more books type of thing?
Yeah, well, I think having your work available in multiple formats is important. We all know, and I know this is something people hear over and over again, but audio is just, again, growing billion-dollar industry. Draft Digital is now enabling authors with the ability to get their ebooks into all the markets and continuing to grow that. So it will continue to expand. And that's not just retail, but it's library markets. So again, not just the traditional retail markets, not just the North American markets, thinking about that. Thinking about print in different ways, shapes, and forms, publishing globally. I think different formats of print as well, since print is still the majority of the overall market. Thinking of audio, and then looking at storytelling in a bigger way. And I think we haven't even touched upon that. AI, virtual reality, games, and not just video games, but games within board games, because there's a resurgence of that tactile feel. Mm. Look at Dungeons and Dragons and how it's appeared on Stranger Things and Riverdale and in different guises, right? And the popularity of that. We saw Book Night Canada recently released this about how the books are selling, the manuals that, you know, 20 plus years ago, 30 years ago, I was buying. So I think being open to the fact that storytelling is not just the forms that we think of, but storytelling is a lifestyle for us. We can be storytellers right now. You and I, we are storytellers right now. People are listening to us. And being open to that next thing. I think we haven't even seen the next thing. And you and I are going to be so excited about that. And we're going to be raving about it. And in 2 years' time, there's going to be something that neither one of us even imagined, despite the fact that we're always looking forward. Mm-hmm. And we'll be talking about going, wow, if only I'd known.
That is very true. But as you say, we'll keep learning and keep talking. So tell people where they can find you and everything you do online.
Well, you can find me at marklesley.ca. You can learn more about Draft to Digital at drafttodigital.com, and that's the numeral two, not T-W-O. And you can listen to the Stark Reflections podcast at starkreflections.ca. Can you tell I'm Canadian?
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for your time, Mark. That was great. So I hope you enjoyed the interview with Mark today and that it gave you a few things to think about in terms of your own career. I always find it encouraging to meet authors and publishing professionals who've been doing this for so many years and are still enthusiastic about it. And of course, I hope you think I'm one of those too. So next Monday, can you believe it? In fact, I'll probably just have to check. Next Monday is New Year's Eve, which is kind of crazy. Yes, indeed it is. And then we are into 2019, which is crazy. So I will be back. I can't believe this either. I'll be back in rainy Bath, rainy and chilly Bath by next week. And I will post my year-end roundup podcast. And then I'll have another show on January the 1st. So it'll be two smaller shows and just slightly changing the schedule. So a Sunday and a Monday. And I will do my plans for 2019, might do some predictions. We will see. I'm just putting it together at the moment. I always enjoy doing this type of thing at this time of year and really thinking back over what I thought I wanted to achieve and then why I might not have achieved it and also what I want to achieve next year. So happy Christmas, everyone. Happy reading, happy writing week, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.